Hello and welcome to the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. I'm your host Misha. I've been learning Mandarin independently outside of China whilst working full-time for around 4 years now. I'm currently at a solid intermediate level in which I can comfortably hold long conversations with native speakers on a wide variety of topics, and I recently started a blog documenting my journey of striving towards fluency and also to help other learners who are at the beginning of their Mandarin journeys. So the goal of my blog and of this podcast is to help you learn how to learn Chinese. You see, as an independent learner based in the UK, the first 2 years of my studies were largely spent figuring out what I should be doing. I hope to help you speed up that process by offering insights and tips based on my experience. So each week, I'll be discussing a new topic regarding how best to learn Chinese, drawing on stories and insights from my experience. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. You can also visit my blog at imlearningmandarin.com, all one word, and sign up to get regular new blogs pinged to your email. The global pandemic has had a profound influence on the way we study languages. On the downside, restrictions have made it difficult to travel abroad, yet the ongoing crisis has also led to record numbers of people taking on a new language. This year, a British Council survey found that 10% of Brits studied a language during lockdown, with Mandarin the third most popular choice after French and Spanish. On today's episode, I explore the theme of learning Mandarin during a global pandemic with Chinese learner and friend of the podcast, Adam Morris. I first met Adam on a dream trip to China in 2018, organised by the Confucius Institute, where we were both studying Mandarin at the time. Following the trip, Adam decided to study a bachelor's degree in Chinese at the University of Leeds, where he's now in his final year. Like me, Adam's Mandarin journey has been profoundly impacted by COVID. In January 2020, his year abroad in Shanghai was dramatically cut short halfway through, and he was forced to return home to Leeds. I wanted to talk to Adam about his journey and learn how he managed to overcome adversity and make the most of a difficult time for all language learners. So Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Misha. Nice to be here.
So I wanted to start by taking our audience back to the moment that you decided to learn Chinese or to dedicate your life to learning Chinese. And in this case, I don't have to ask you when that moment was, because I believe that I personally remember when that moment was. You and I met for the first time after we'd both taken some evening classes at the Confucius Institute. And we took advantage of an opportunity to travel to China with the Confucius Institute to Beijing. And that's where I met you for the first time. And we were sharing a room together. And we had a great time. And it was a really good trip. And we did loads of sightseeing. We took Chinese classes. Both of us were at a very low level at that point. We'd only just started learning. And then I remember towards the end of the trip, one day we're getting ready for bed. And you sort of just turned to me and said, I think I'm going to quit everything that I'm doing in life and dedicate my life to studying Chinese. Do you remember that moment?
Yes, I do. Very profoundly. Yeah, it was, like you said, it was an amazing trip. I think when I first saw the trip advertised, I thought it was almost seemed too good to be true. Yeah, we had an amazing time. At that point, I had only studied Chinese for 12 hours. The trip had a really big impact on my life and what I wanted to do, and totally changed how I saw China as a country and the language and the people, now that I had experienced it. And yeah, I remember I made that decision to study it for my undergrad.
Absolutely. Just to give people an idea of the kind of level that we were both at that time, I remember on our first evening, it got to about 10 p.m. and we were both feeling quite hungry. So we left the hotel room in search of food. And I just remember, like, we couldn't really find anywhere open at the time. So we decided, like, we might go and venture and try and ask the woman at the counter at the hotel. And I remember, like, I sort of trying to think of the words that I could say that, like, and I think I remember I thought I knew the word for chicken and I knew the word for where. So I was sort of like, chi chi nali, or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that. a lot of awkward stares back from the receptionist.
It didn't get very far, but never mind. So what do you remember from that trip, and what do you think it was in particular that had such a profound impact on you that led you to make that monumental decision to study Chinese full time?
Yeah, so for me, one of the things I enjoyed the most about the trip was, first of all, being in China, a country that I had seen pictures of since I was a child. You know, the Great Wall, the Terracotta Warriors, these kind of things. I never actually thought that I would go there. And apart from being in the country, probably the ability for the first time in my life to be able to use the language that we'd learned at BCI, so very low level, but actually be able to go there and apply it, even if it was sort of a simple interaction like ordering a drink. For me, that was a really kind of scary but exhilarating experience. I distinctly remember there was a coffee shop across the road from the hotel, and I went there to order a latte. And I was so nervous because here I was in China. I think this was the first day in this situation. At that point, I could only count to 10. I knew so little, but I really wanted to just use it. And I remember the first time I successfully ordered something in Chinese and having that feeling of accomplishment and achievement as such a simple thing. Because at that point, I was very much in the mindset of Chinese is just an absolutely bonkers language.
So that was in around March 2018, so just over 3 years ago. And then following that, I believe that you then enrolled on the Bachelor's in Chinese at the University of Leeds, and you began that in September of the same year, so September of 2018. Do you recall that period, the initial period of that first year of university?
At first, it was a little bit of a shock because up until that point, a lot of what I had done, like I've already mentioned, was not focused on writing characters. So I could recognize a lot of characters. I could probably write 100 or so. But when I remember I started at the University of Leeds in the second week after the kind of introductory pleasantries and stuff were over, and I was asked to write some sentences in one of the seminars. And looking back now, it's very simple sentences, and I was shocked because I couldn't write them. I knew them. I knew the tones. I knew the meaning, but I couldn't write them. So the first semester was certainly me getting up to speed writing the characters. I did that. I found some language exchange partners using the service at the University of Leeds. So even at that level, I didn't have a very wide range of expressions, but I was slowly increasing my vocabulary. So I met two Chinese people through the language exchange service, and we would go for dinner, and I would try and use what little Chinese I knew.
One of the attractions to studying on an undergraduate program must have been the fact that the course itself included a year abroad in the second year. Was that something that you'd always been looking forward to? And then what was that like when you finally got to do that?
Yes, so the year abroad, yeah, that was one of the key reasons I chose University of Leeds. I was very much looking forward to the year abroad. I actually, my Chinese underwent another big transformation in the summer of 2019, because I found a language partner, another one, who had actually many years of experience teaching Chinese as a foreign language, and she wanted to improve her English. So pretty much over the summer of 2019, if you ask any of my friends, I was in the library a lot, or in my house having a language exchange every day. I was studying quite hard because I wanted to enter my year abroad and go to Shanghai with as much knowledge as I could and with my level at the highest it could be. So I worked quite hard over the summer. As for my experience in Shanghai, yeah, it was fantastic. I think if you ask anybody who has been to China on a year abroad, especially, you know, my classmates, we will all agree that Shanghai was an amazing time. A very frightening time, because even though at that point I had already passed HSK3, now I found myself kind of thrust into real daily life Chinese, you know, and this is also when I saw probably the most rapid expansion of my vocabulary, of my continuous improvements to my writing and my speaking and listening. I attended Shanghai Jiao Tong University, so we had classes for reading, intensive reading, speaking, listening. And writing was kind of incorporated into the reading classes. There's a lot to learn, you know, when you first moved to Shanghai. It was a very interesting but enriching experience, you know.
It sounds like the experience in general of the year abroad really matched the expectations and was a really fantastic experience. Unfortunately, in the middle of your year abroad, the pandemic hit. So that would have been in January of 2020. I remember that at that time, in my own case, I was about to fly out to China because I was taking part in a conference at the British Council were organizing. And unfortunately, I then found out I was close to sort of flying out to that conference that the pandemic hit and the whole thing was cancelled. I remember shortly after that I received a text message from you saying your year abroad had been cancelled and you were back in the UK. That must have been quite a shock to you at that time.
Yeah, because for anybody who's not aware, in China, at least in Shanghai at my university, the semester is very intense. You have midterm exams and final exams. And unlike the British system, these both happen in the midst of the semester. So when you have the winter holiday in China, it really is a winter holiday. We didn't have any homework to do, any assignments, no exams to prepare for. So the winter vacation period was a time when people were making plans. You know, some of my classmates went to Japan, Korea, Taiwan. Some people went back home to the UK. I planned a trip, and actually in mid-January, I planned a trip to Ningbo, which is a city about 2 hours away from Shanghai. And on the way there, I got sick, actually, and I had to come back to Shanghai. And from then onwards, which was around the middle of January, it became very apparent when I was checking Chinese social media, even with my limited vocabulary, that there was kind of a situation unfolding and that I was asking my Chinese friend who was back in Shanghai at that point. It was a very strange and slightly scary time because this was before the obviously coronavirus spread to the rest of the world. So it was hard to know what was going on. And ultimately the University of Leeds, I think it was the 31st of January, they decide to formally recall us and we had to go back. But I think some classmates did stay. It was, not the ending I hoped for my year abroad. I had some travels that I wanted to do. I obviously, the biggest impact was that I couldn't continue being immersed in a Chinese language environment. I loved my time in Shanghai. So yeah, a bit of a sad end.
So shortly after that, then you flew back to the UK and found yourself going from a situation of immersion, being surrounded by the language, to one of being in the UK and also in lockdown, which began in March of 2020. What was that transition like then for you?
It was very abrupt. And yeah, I felt it very acutely because, I left Shanghai and 2 days later, I was back in the UK. And back into a totally English environment. I think honestly, at first, my brain subconsciously appreciated the fact that I didn't have to continuously translate any sign I see or any interaction. So the first few days, it was kind of a rest, a period of rest in my brain. And then February was very much waiting to see what would happen to the rest of our year abroad. Were we going to have exams? Will we have online classes? Would it just be cut short and we would not do anything until September? So it's a very unknown time. As for the impact on my Chinese, I think I felt it, yes. I felt it very acutely because suddenly now the onus had changed from me being provided everything I needed to continue to improve my Chinese and being immersed. And now I was thrust back into that position where it was up to me as an individual language learner to find materials, to find things that I wanted to do, because at that time I didn't know what would happen in the coming months.
So when you came back from your year abroad, the year abroad actually technically did continue and you continued to have classes, but they shifted to online. So you had a semester that was fully online that was technically labeled a year abroad, but you were obviously studying from your computer in the UK. What was that experience like?
So I came back from Shanghai in 1st of February. Throughout February, we didn't know what was happening. And then the University of Leeds told us, okay, you're going to have a semester online. So then we had classes from, I believe, the first week of March until the middle of July. It was a good experience, but difficult. And I did still continue to make progress with my Chinese. First of all, Shanghai Jiao Tong University had to very quickly get used to teaching online. And with many different students from different countries, it wasn't always easy. There were connection problems. But in terms of the effect it had on my Chinese language learning. It was great. I think it was difficult at times, and it was certainly a bit tiring. We always had the classes from 8 a.m. until 12 p.m. I think, and they were all in Chinese, just like the physical classes in Jiaotong. But it was great because even though I wasn't immersed in the language environment like I was in Shanghai, where I could leave the class and then go to a restaurant and, you know, or meet friends, the semester abroad was still very useful for contributing to, you know, my knowledge of grammar, improving my listening, especially improving my speaking. If anything, the classes online were slightly smaller. I remember the reading class in particular, I've always struggled with the third tone followed by the second tone in Chinese. I'm sure maybe for most people, that's the one that has the most difficulty, or maybe 3-3. And I remember there was a very sweet older teacher, and he would always correct people when we did jindu, which was reading. He was very diligent in correcting our tones, and I felt like I didn't get that kind of focused correction when I was attending physical classes in Shanghai. So that was actually a really unexpected benefit.
What you've just said resonates with me. I think my experience was obviously very different because I wasn't going from a situation of complete immersion back to the UK. But in my case, initially, when lockdown was imposed in March of 2020, I did initially feel like this was a negative for my Chinese learning. It meant that I wasn't able to organize my weekly meetups to meet Chinese friends face to face, and as I had been doing previously. What it forced me to do was basically look for other ways to learn Chinese, look for more innovative ways to self-study. When you reflect back on that period then, do you see any positives that came out of that in terms of other opportunities coming back from your year abroad that could kind of close the deficit there a little bit, try to make a good situation out of a bad situation?
Yeah, I think throughout the pandemic, you know, a lot of people have stressed resilience, and I think that very much still applies to language learners, because it's very easy to think, okay, I'm back in the UK now, I'm not in a Chinese language environment, I will just stop. But I think if you ask any language learner who has been through that experience, having your language ability decline, even if temporarily, and then having to readdress that and kind of pull yourself back up to where you were before is a very unpleasant, unenjoyable experience. And yeah, at that time, my primary focus was to use the Chairman's Bao, which for those who don't know is the graded reader. That was a primary focus because I was able to practice and improve my reading, my listening. I would do what's called shadowing, where I would just kind of copy the audio and speak out loud at the same time to kind of keep my speaking alive. I found that, you know, you cannot easily replicate the language environment, but you can do many things to reach certainly close to it.
Absolutely. Were you able to keep in touch with any Chinese people, friends from China, or use apps that help you connect and keep speaking alive at all?
Yes, I remember I used HelloTalk for a while, and I had my friends back in Shanghai. I would continue to speak to them and practice, you know, Chinese with them. I think at that point, maybe I was still, because it was quite a stressful time, you know, very uncertain, I think I just didn't want my knowledge of characters to start dwindling, because as any Chinese language learner knows, the characters are very easy to forget if you don't review them often. And at that point, obviously, my vocabulary had grown probably to around HSK4 level, so I didn't want to forget those those words and characters that I had painstakingly learned throughout the semester abroad in Shanghai.
One of the things that I've written about and talked about on this podcast before is the fact that as somebody like myself who has exclusively learned Chinese from outside of China, I've often been aware of the benefits that people who are immersed in that environment have over me, particularly in terms of being able to interact more with Chinese continually around them. Having said that, though, I've always felt that there are certain aspects of learning Chinese where people in China don't really have a natural advantage. For example, with reading and with things like reviewing vocabulary using flashcard apps and that kind of thing, there's no reason why you can't do as much of that. There's no reason why you can't read as much outside of China as in China. Was that something then that you took advantage of once you were back from Shanghai?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of kind of independent reading and watching a lot of YouTube videos about people who are prominent, people such as Matt versus Japan, people who believe in the method of language learning where it predominantly rests on input. I know you've mentioned before on here, you've certainly written about Stephen Krashen. I believe it's the input hypothesis. And I know Dr. Krashen very much emphasizes that before you can produce output, you need a lot of input, because that's how our brains from when we are small children are programmed to work. And I think my personal experience actually, it resonates with that quite well. When I went to Shanghai and I was in the language learning environment, I was still reading. And you're right in saying that those things can still be practiced when you're not in the native country. I think the key issue is that language immersion is great. However, these days you can really reach a level that's close to the immersion. So you can find language exchange partners online. You can, you know, book classes online. There's many different websites available. Many universities will have language exchange services these days. We have Pleco, graded readers, movies, YouTube. So although, yes, we cannot fully replicate the situation that you will get if you are walking down a street in Shanghai and you are listening, you know, half listening to all the conversations had by people as you pass them. Yes, but you can certainly use many different tools to achieve close to that. And also the benefit of doing that is that it's much more targeted. So for example, I think it's a given that as part of any curriculum, there will always be things in there that students are not personally interested in. Maybe they're not interested in literature or politics or business, but yet if you are studying abroad, maybe actually that's part of the curriculum or the syllabus you have to study. So if you become a kind of independent learner, you can focus on what you like the most, but also you can be introspective and look at what you are lacking in your own Chinese.
I'm wondering, in terms of your own experience of reading and listening, are there any particular reading materials that you found particularly useful, any particular YouTube channels, things that you enjoyed, content that you really enjoyed immersing in once you were forced to do that through not being in China?
I think I'm a little bit unusual in that I don't watch much TV in my daily life. Sure, I will watch some Netflix, but I know other Chinese language learners like to watch game shows, especially from Taiwan. I don't really find that kind of thing interesting. There are some amazing YouTube channels. I think there is one, it's just called Intermediate Chinese, where they have a long video podcast, just like you and I are doing now, but in Chinese, and they will speak about very topical things. And for me, those are really great because the vocabulary they use, the sentence structures, and you can find a topic you're interested in. So I like to use those on YouTube. There are some great podcasts as well. I use some podcasts. I use the Chairman's Bow for graded reading. I obviously have my university materials as well, which really kind of focus down on the grammar points, especially synonyms and how to distinguish when to use them and things that kind of come in when you're reaching towards the higher levels. So that's kind of what forms part of my weekly routine. But for me, certainly the biggest thing that I have used, the biggest resource, has been online tuition. And if anybody is listening and they're thinking, oh, online tuition sounds great, but it sounds expensive, I had a call this morning, 60 minutes with a native Chinese speaker, and it was about £7 or £8. I think that's a fair amount of money to pay for really focused speaking practice, where you can decide the topic or you can tell the teacher to just kind of challenge you, correct your pronunciation. And the corrections you receive will obviously trickle down into your reading and your writing as well, and they'll bring benefits in those areas.
I'm wondering then, because having gone through the initial disappointment of having your year abroad cancelled, and then recovering from that, as we've discovered on this podcast, is returning to China, is spending time in China again, something that's on your mind for the future?
I think going to China in the future is, yes, definitely something that is still on my mind. Obviously, at the moment, the pandemic is definitely posing a significant problem towards making any kind of future plans or, you know, master's plans that will necessitate going to China. Hopefully, the situation continues to improve. However, I think if I decide not to go to China, as we've already discussed, I would always continue to maintain my Chinese because of all the reasons we previously mentioned. I think that's quite achievable.
I'm wondering then, Adam, when we both reflect on our experiences of learning Chinese during the pandemic and sum up how that's gone for us, For me, I'd say the main positive is having more time to spend on input, as we've discussed. And if I had one piece of advice to give to other learners who find themselves in a situation learning China from abroad, it's that they should focus primarily on being able to understand Chinese. So focus on improving your comprehension through lots and lots of listening and reading, lots of input of comprehensible content, as we've discussed. And gradually your comprehension of Chinese will improve even without living in the country. What would be for you the piece of advice that you would like to give to other people who are finding themselves in the situation that you were thrust into after your year abroad?
I think the best piece of advice is firstly to be honest with yourself. Take a really good look at your language level and identify where you are strong in your language ability and where you are weak. As I already said, I've always enjoyed speaking, even though it's sometimes, yes, it can be stressful, especially, you know, in the third year that's just passed by, we had to do interpreting classes, which were very difficult for me. But my weakness has always been writing. So be honest with yourself and identify those weaknesses and strengths and focus on them and try and improve them. Because if you ignore them, and let's say you are really good at writing characters, and it's because it's easy to sit down and write, you know, 50 characters, but your weakness is your listening and speaking, try your best using the tools and the resources you have to focus on that and improve that. And if you're not sure how, you know, there are more and more Chinese learners these days, and there are more people producing online content that you can see how other people have addressed this problem. You know, there are some people I've seen, they can speak fluently, but their writing is terrible. How do they address that issue? My second piece of advice would be to find a language partner, and don't be shy to practice your speaking. Because really, I think what people easily forget, especially maybe academic students of Chinese, is that language is about communication. That is the only reason we have language. We don't, you know, if you have a Chinese language partner, you don't only write letters to them. You want to be able to speak to them, send them voice clips, listen to them. And I know that maybe some people are hearing that and they think, oh no, maybe they have a kind of feeling in their stomach. No, I don't want to go outside and practice speaking with Chinese students or with language partners. But sometimes you just have to be brave and do it and realize that what's the worst that will happen? Usually people have this kind of built up idea that they will be horrifically embarrassed if they make a mistake, that the Chinese, you know, people will laugh at them. But really, I've never had that kind of situation. The worst that will happen is you say something wrong, maybe everyone has a little bit of a chuckle, and then you make a note of it, move on, and learn from your experience.
So I think that's really good advice, and I hope that all our listeners will reflect on what Adam has said. And thank you so much for joining us today, Adam. That all of your insights have been really interesting, and also listening to your story has been fascinating. So I'm sure our listeners will have taken a lot from that. So thank you for joining us again today.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a really great experience, and it's been a great pleasure to share my experiences and listen to your viewpoints as well.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. If you're currently looking to improve your Mandarin speaking skills, you might like to check out my Peak Mandarin newsletter. Run by me and my friend Will Hart, we share exactly what you need to do to become fluent in Chinese based on our experience. Subscribe to the newsletter and we'll also send you a free copy of my ebook, Lessons from a Chinese Learning Phenomenon, which tells the story of exactly how Will Hart learned to speak near native level Chinese within a 1.5 year period, how I put his techniques into practice to become fluent myself, and how you can too. To subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to peakmandarin.com or click the link in the description. That's all for now. Until next episode, goodbye.